Right now on Tech Radio, content advisory. Today's episode is all about money and abuse.
Hi, I'm Artemis. I am a computer-generated AI voice, and you're listening to Tech Radio.
Every week online and on air with RT Radio, we bring you the latest in tech from Ireland and across the world. You're welcome to episode 1015, looking back on the seven biggest stories of the week where abuse, bullying and exploitation are making the headlines on video platforms. And it's all bad financial news for our favourite people, Musk and Trump. Also, in our interview this week, we're finding out about blockchain being used in farming with the CEO of Demetra, John Trask.
From TechCentral.ie, this is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
I'm Dusty, Niall Kitson, our editor-in-chief here, as always. Did you watch the primetime thing on RT about TikTok? Because I didn't.
It's on the player, so I'll get around to watching it. I have the summary. Very important that we frame the discussion on the next few stories in the context of abuse and money, because there is some very large companies making an awful lot of money off abuse. For the moment, we haven't implemented enough of a penalty to make sure things like what we're going to talk about don't happen. You know, which is interesting, seeing as we have the Digital Service Act and we have Commissioner Naman working on the online safety code. So hopefully the legal apparatus will be in place to make sure things like this don't happen in the future. So, well, will we jump in and talk about what happened with TikTok?
We won't.
Or do you want to?
We won't, because I want to correct you first, right?
It's
unfair to say the companies are making money out of this, okay?
Okay.
Because they're not deliberately doing this to make money. I just don't think they've got their systems right and bad things are happening. Something needs to be done about it. I think it would be a more accurate way of saying it.
Okay, right. We are at slightly at odds with it. So I'm interested in jumping down this rabbit hole to see, you know, are we destined to become the divorced uncle who spends his time on, you know, Daily Wire or The Blaze or any of these things, simply because a certain social network told us.
All right. Okay. Listen, let's get into it. Okay. Because people listening can make up their own mind about it. What we're talking about is TikTok and YouTube to a certain extent. All right. There's been a couple of tests out this week. DCU have done one and RT also did one. The first one with TikTok and RT was a primetime special. They got, I can't remember, what was it, 12 phones or something like that or whatever. Anyway, clean phones, a bank of clean phones, okay? So they were all factory settings, okay, with no personal information on them. Then they installed the TikTok app, okay? They registered themselves as a 13-year-old, or I think possibly even as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, but young, all right? And then just kind of started looking through videos on the app just to see what would be thrown up. And the horrid thing that was found, and this is not a surprise to me, right, is that videos about self-harm and suicidal thoughts from young people came up really quickly.
Yeah.
And the problem with the algorithms is that if you were to watch one of those or some of them, the algorithm, because it's not got human intelligence, is kind of going, maybe they like this. Maybe I'll give them some more information about this and send them more videos about self-harm, more videos about suicidal thoughts. And we all know from years and years and years of social media, text or image or video or audio or otherwise, is that when you keep starting to see those things, you get the, what's the word for it?
Dopamine hit.
No, it's not the dopamine hit, but it's an echo chamber. That's exactly what I was looking for. It wasn't coming to mind. Okay, so you get that echo chamber. And I noticed this. Now, not necessarily on those topics, but if, say, I develop a recent interest in flying and doing flying lessons again, suddenly my YouTube Shorts is full of videos about flying and learning how to fly and data and everything to do with aviation. So that's what's happening. But the fact that it's happening with 13-year-old kids. Now, DCU did an experiment as well, all right, where they did the same thing, where I think they took 10 phones or something like that. And what they did with the phones was they registered as male. I don't think age was important, all right? But they registered as male. That was the thing, right? And again, within half an hour, they found that they were being fed videos which were misogynistic and masculinist.
Yeah. So they were getting an entry point to the manosphere.
Exactly. So again, the echo chamber is going. And when you see enough of these things from so many different people and stuff, you begin to think that this is fact when it's not.
Yeah, or it normalizes certain things.
Exactly. And that's only because out of a million videos, they may have say 1,000 videos on these subjects, okay, which is a drop in the ocean. But because they've seen you click on one or two of those, it starts feeding you all of those thousands and you think this is all that the internet is talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, and, you know, recommender systems, I mean, they're not new by any stretch of the imagination. They've just gotten really good. I mean, if you go for a search on iTunes for us, you'll see that, you know, we're surrounded by lots of similar podcasts. But if you were to go into an iTunes, you know, chart as such, if there weren't recommenders, I mean, you wouldn't see us anywhere because our you know, listenership isn't very big.
Yeah, and in all fairness, the recommendation algorithm is actually, it's a great thing. And it started with Amazon years ago. Oh, if you like this book, maybe you'll like this book. So it is a great thing and it can give you things that you like. But like everything that's good in the world, like even chocolate is one of the best inventions that was ever made, right? But if you eat too much of it, it's bad for you. So you've just kind of got to be careful.
In the case of these studies on TikTok and YouTube Shorts, I mean, you are being presented with things that are beyond the terms of service of both websites, being served up to a very vulnerable audience. Mm. So that is extremely concerning. And the point you make about them being on clean phones is, you know, quite scary because, you know, you don't need to have a precedent of, oh, a friend sent me this and I clicked on the link and before. No, this is unprompted.
And that's the scary part. Mm. I don't think that it is a deliberate ploy by any platform to make money out of it, but I think it is a problem or a bug, if you want to downplay it, but it's certainly a problem with the algorithm and the algorithm needs to be fixed. And Meta and Facebook, I mean, they've been through this years before anybody else. They kind of look at TikTok, kind of say that they only will recommend videos based on what it is that you have already clicked. It doesn't care. All right. Whereas Facebook would take a different kind of a look at it and it would look at videos that you like and what other people like and people like you and what they like. And they do some kind of moderation and stuff like that as well. So they have a different way of looking at things. But I think TikTok would be a more basic kind of a way, the way the algorithm works. And it's not working very well at the moment. So interestingly,
Meta, go on. Yeah, the Meta case is interesting because they have come out with, you know, ostensibly the most proactive way of moderating their platform in that they say, we've got human moderators and, you know, we've got moderation centers in Dublin. They've also used moderation centers in the States. We've got, you know, AI working on this. You know, we also have an oversight board that will, you know, that's semi-independent and will tell us how we're doing. A board that has come back to them on many an occasion and said, look, you're not doing well enough. You've got to be better, guys. And you're paying our wages. So, you know, we really mean it.
it's true, but it needs to be improved. And I think what we're looking at today with that thing, and it's great that RTE and DCU and places like that do studies like that because they're exposing the darker side of an algorithm and the way something is set up. And by people exposing these things, they can get fixed. It's kind of like the law. That's the way I look at it. Because, I mean, the law has been going for, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years and stuff like that. But there's always a little crack in the law or there's always a little loophole. And as soon as somebody starts using it and gets away with stuff, there's always somebody else there going, oi, you can't do that. And they fix it. No, I think it's the same thing with the algorithm.
I don't think this can be fixed.
Really?
Once that genie is out of the bottle, once it has been demonstrated that, for want of a better term, you know, a bad behavior can be spread, you're playing whack-a-mole thereafter, because people will create anonymous accounts. People will, especially in an age where we are getting AI-generated content that is becoming ever more convincing. So you will have people sort of pushing together fake content on, you know, anonymous or you know, burner accounts, if you will. They'll go up. They will be looking for a certain level of engagement, perhaps, you know, and support our sponsors. And, you know, okay, the network in question might catch up with it, slam down the ban hammer, but the same person will just go on, create another account, or maybe even you'll have click farms creating entire accounts. I mean, I've been on YouTube videos recently and, you know, I'm watching them and I'm like, okay, well, the content here is rubbish and I disagree with it anyway. But then you just get slight inflections in the narration and I'm like, oh, hang on, this isn't even a human voice. This was probably ChatGPT, give me a script with the following. And then look for an AI generated voice to go with it. No, you know, minimum human interaction at all. But here it is, you know, it's inflammatory. It's there to sort of get your blood up, to make you, you know, to whatever grievance you have, you get it heard back to you and reinforces it. So, you know, that's what we're dealing with. And I don't think any, you know, legal process is going to help, because if you've got farms doing this in Russia, in China, you know, they've they're looking at an election, they're looking to sow domestic discontent through about immigration, about, you know, the economy, about, you know, inverted commas, elites that are, you know, apparently running the world. These are the problems. And, you know, networks are going to struggle with this and it's done. You know, it's an eternal problem.
They will always struggle with that. And my example with the law being around for thousands and thousands of years, it adapts over time as things change. And I hope, and I think I'm pretty sure that what's happening is that the platforms, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, all of these are adapting as they go along. And yes, they are playing whack-a-mole to a certain extent, but they are trying to do something. And I think the key is, are they actually trying to do something? And a lot of people say, well, maybe not so much with TikTok. Google will probably try and do something. And I have a feeling that Meta will probably be the one who will make the most effort to do something, because they're the ones who've been dumped in the dirt so often over things have happened on their platform. And maybe they'll lead the way, which brings us to our next story in relation to this, which has happened here in Ireland, in the Oireachtas of all places. I mean, tech in the Oireachtas, what's going on? The Oireachtas Committee on Children invited, and I love it when the Oireachtas invites you. There's no obligation for you to go, but you go and it's like being in court. However, they invited Meta and TikTok both in to the Committee on Children. And Meta was making the case of one thing they want to do at a EU level, or maybe even worldwide, is to have some kind of an age verification system. Which again is almost like a thorny topic on its own. But what they're saying is that if there was an age verification system to say that somebody is over 13, so they're at least they're a teenager, or somebody is over 18 or over 21, as the three levels would be at, you could do this at App Store level. So, you know, kind of to register for an App Store, maybe you need to have a credit card, and you have to be, of course, you don't have to be over 18 to have a credit card, do you? But anyways, but they'll find a way that when you're first interacting, like, you know, kind of, it's like if you sign up for Facebook, maybe there's some kind of, you have to upload your ID. I'm getting this now with LinkedIn, right? LinkedIn are like, verify your account. Basically, send us a copy of your passport is what they want. Maybe Facebook are kind of saying, we need a copy of your passport, or we need a parent to sign off on things, or you need to have a credit card or provide a bank statement or something like that, just to prove you are of age. I'm not keen on that. I don't like it. All right. There's a whole kind of privacy kind of things. But at least what Meta are saying is it's done once.
Yeah.
Once, and that's it. And then for everything else you do after that is just a tick beside your name to say, yep, old enough.
Yeah. Because, I mean, what are the options at the moment? Like a drop down and take it on faith. You know,
well, and that doesn't work. Like, you know, X are having the same thing, and we'll have a little thing about that later. Also, we were talking about AIs, and AI kind of on this thing is like pouring petrol on a spark, essentially, because we've got all these little loopholes at the moment where people are able to get through. But when AI does it 1,000, 10,000 times faster than any human being could do it. And AI, of course, we're talking about deepfakes. This is the big thing. It's able to copy people's voices, is able to copy people's faces, is able to, we've seen the Tom Cruise one, which wasn't Tom Cruise, but it looks exactly like him. And that is then developed on into deepfake porn, where people are putting the faces of famous celebrities onto porn images and videos to make it look like the celebrity is doing that. Quite rightly, the celebrity is going, oh my God, it is a violation. If your face and likeness is on and you know what people are doing when they're watching it, that is a violation. Celebrities are one thing, right? Because in some ways, I can't say that I don't have time for celebrities, but if you want to put yourself out there as a celebrity and have a public profile, you've got to expect that these things will happen. Where I would be really worried about it, right, is if it happens to ordinary man or woman in the street like yourself, myself, or our partners, and their face was imposed on somebody in a porn video for somebody else's gratification. What can you do about it as a normal citizen?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are laws against revenge porn.
They're only starting to come in, but this is deepfake porn, and it's kind of like, you know, kind of, well, can you prove it's not that person because nobody knows who it is? Do you know what I mean? And the other thing is that if that goes online and many people do see it or it's shared on social video, they're not going to, you might have a little fake alarm in the back of your head to go, well, Taylor Swift is definitely not going to do that with a donkey. All right. But if it's a woman down the road, it's kind of like, I didn't know she was into that. Do you know what I mean? Do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you mean. But oddly enough, this idea, just as we're talking, jumped into my head. Yeah. And this sort of speaks to something we'll be talking about later in terms of X. One of the most popular, I'm not even going to call it a social network at the moment, is OnlyFans, are we going to see AI generated models on OnlyFans? Are we sort of seeing the current generation of what they like to call themselves, models?
Mm.
Sometimes content creators.
Content creators.
on OnlyFans.
You have a wicked smile on your face as you say that. but you're right. You're right. Things are developing and technology is developing and AI is, and all of these things are coming and the things that we have to deal with. All right. Mm. And I think the good part of our news story today is that these things are happening. We can prove that they are happening. We can now take the people in who are the platforms in and say something needs to be done about it. And as we're seeing with the Oireachtas, Meta and TikTok are being hauled in. That won't be just on an Irish level. That'll be on a UK level. And in the UK, the story that we had about the deepfake porn is that they are bringing in a law where sexually explicit deepfake images will be made illegal, regardless of whether you're just going to use it privately or you're going to publish it publicly. All right. And I like, because we often give out about the fines. And you said already earlier in our episode today, the fines for the big social media companies, and they're not enough. The fine for deepfake porn in the UK for a person is unlimited. It's an unlimited fine if you are doing that kind of behavior. And if it's seen on a wide public use, they will also throw you in jail.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about when the report came out in The Guardian, when it mentioned an unlimited fine, I think an important word to add to that would be unprecedented. Because, you know, you've got a student who's got a part-time job. He's earning maybe £9,000 a year. He can just about cover his rent. On the side, he creates deepfake material so he can, you know, eat. Okay, he's going to get a fine that will reflect a sufficient decline in his living standards that would, you know, be appropriate punishment. Okay? Compare and contrast with a content farm in another part of the world. Totally different situation. Yeah. So let's, I am interested to see what the precedents are on this. A most unfortunate case to have to take to, you know, preserve your reputation and control your likeness. Mm. But what the precedents will be, I'm very interested to see. Or because if it's an individual doing it, it's not like you can do what the Digital Services Act does and yeah. charge them a percentage of your turnover. You just have to look at what somebody's lifestyle is and what is the appropriate sanction.
Grant, well, listen, as I say, the good part of this story is that something is being done about it. So we'll leave it at that for now. Now, we're running quite out of time because we spoke way more than that I was expecting. So I've got some stories about sci-fi TV series and movies to come later. There's three money stories that I think I'll just run through and then we get to the review of the human AI pin. Is that okay with you?
Okay. Can we just have a laugh for the next few stories?
Yes. Okay. Elon Musk has lost a load of money. Hey! There you go. Trump has lost a load of money. Hey!
Low-hanging fruit, Dusty. Low-hanging fruit.
Elon Musk. We'll have a laugh in a second at the human AI, but yeah. Tesla's cut 10% of the workforce.
It's about 14,000 jobs, so not funny at
not
all.
Not funny for the people who lost the jobs, you're right. Production of the Cybertruck has stopped because there's a problem with the accelerator and they're doing all kinds of deals. They're shipping more cars than ever, but they're just not selling them is the problem.
Yeah, they're making more cars than they're selling, which has been, they've had that opposite problem for years, such was the demand. They've also gone through a period where they reduced the price of their cars with sort of a, for want of a better term, a roadmap of introducing a more affordable model to come straight off the parking lot this year. Those ideas have been scrapped. Prices are going up. However, the price of their self-driving system, it's a subscription service. I didn't know that. It has gone down from $199 a month to $99 a month. Still an awful lot of money to entrust to something I definitely would not trust. And also, on principle by anyone, not just by Tesla. But and then production of the Cybertrucks have stopped because what was happening was that, now stop me if I'm wrong on this, but I don't think I am. It's the pad on the accelerator pedal was coming loose and getting stuck. So, you know, just something, you know, for a vehicle that was created with so much emphasis on the user experience, for something so, I'm going to call it a modest flaw or a very basic flaw. If Cybertruck was being made by Ford, this would not have happened. You can be sure of it. So this is something that I guess it's the downside of being involved in a, you know, disruptive company. That maybe they're not looking at the same things traditional industry did, and traditional industry looks at certain things a certain way for a reason, because, you know, processes have evolved and mistakes were made in the past, that there is that sort of what do you call it, institutional knowledge that, you know, disruptive market players just don't necessarily have. And it seems that there was kind of an issue with the Cybertruck. I mean, not the first time Tesla has had to recall a vehicle by any manner of means. So look, they're having a bad time in terms of optics. They're having a bad time in terms of overproduction. They're having a bad time in the area of pricing. But Cybertrucks might be out, but in August, do you know what they're bringing in to fix everything?
Oh, God, what?
Robo-taxis.
Oh, no.
There you go. Hey, look over here.
Yeah. Well, once the robo-taxi doesn't try and have a conversation with you, I think there might be a future for it. You wanted to giggle Trump media and technology with Truth Social, et cetera, et cetera. Loss-making was put onto the stock market, blah, 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 blah. The price is just falling. And one of the reasons is because Trump has said that they want to create a costly streaming media expansion is what they want to go for, and i.e. stream TV services, including Ready for the Giggle. They want to supply high quality news.
Yeah, sure they do. Sure. He doesn't even know what he's saying, to be honest. Based on what we know in his courtroom appearances, he's probably just spouting buzzwords as far as he cares. Exactly. I mean, as you said, it has made $4 million, but it cost $62 million. It floated thanks to a special acquisition company. And it was going at $70 a share initially. Last time I checked, it was going for $25. Have you ever heard of a pump and dump scam?
It's not a scam, but
it's a strategy.
Yeah, GameStop and all that,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you just artificially inflate the quality, you artificially inflate the share price. Either an influencer comes on and says, oh, I've got all these shares, they're fantastic. And it, you know, it creates hype and improves the share price, even though there's no underlying reason, there's no underlying business value to what's being done. Trump has sold, Trump Media and Technology, Truth Social, on the back of his personal brand and the loyalty of his cult. That's what it is. It's a cult of personality. And when it is sort of revealed that, okay, that cult doesn't seem to be particularly interested in supporting this company, and that Trump, I believe he sold, he's limited to selling shares, but they want to sell more shares in the company, right? So they want to sell something like 100 million more shares. They want to dilute the share value even more, which just says to me, yeah, this is pure pump and dump. Try and get something out of it while the hype is there, and then move on to something else. And you know what? If Truth Social is shut down in a year or two's time, there were the only people on it were people that liked Trump anyway and journalists looking to quote him.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Anyways, leave Trump and Musk behind us. Let's talk about the human AI pin, because this is a bit of gadgetry that when we first heard about it last year, we loved the idea. And if I'm not mistaken, I was the one evangelizing, saying, this is the future. A small little square-shaped piece of plastic that you would just attach to your shirt and you would interact with it using your voice. So you would just tap it, much as we do with Her Who Cannot Be Named. You would just tap it, it would become active and listen to your voice. You go, call such and such a person, or send a text to such and such a person, or remind me to buy milk when I am passing the shop. That kind of stuff, right? Mm. Very simple, brilliant idea. We couldn't wait to get our hands on it. It has just gone out into the wild. The reviewers of the world have been looking at it and they all bowed down and they said it was
rubbish.
Utter. So it's one of the most slammed bits of tech I have ever seen, which I think is unfortunate because, the two people who are behind this, the two main guys behind it, are from our ex-Apple engineers.
Yeah, it's a husband and wife team, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not like they don't have a pedigree, do you know what I mean? And I think they've got an excellent vision and I think people were excited about it, but now the implementation is just terrible.
Well, I mean, when we looked at it, I mean, I was quite enamored of this thing as well. Yeah. But in a sort of a, let's see, what the second generation is like, as we always should be. Yeah. But it was a bizarrely lifeless promo. Like it was, and here's what we're going to, it was just flat. There was the affectation on the whole thing was just very, it was like ChatGPT, give me an Apple presentation. That's just going to be the joke about everything. That's not a good version of something else. But I mean, on the surface, the idea is really good. Smartphone without the phone bits. Why not? It's like Siri Plus. It's Google Assistant Plus.
Yeah.
It's Alexa Plus. Have I set off everything in your office there now, Dusty?
Well, not quite, because I unplugged them all first. But it's, yeah, I think it's a shame. I thought it was a really good idea. The one thing, the other thing that they had was, because it has no screen, they had to come up with some kind of a thing, and they have got a projector built into this time. I mean, the fact they can put a projector into something that small, okay, is amazing tech in itself. And you use your hand as the screen for the projector. But people have been saying that the idea was you hold your hand in a certain way, or you hold it closer, or you fold it further away. And anybody who's actually used it in real life went, I just feel like an idiot. And you would feel like an idiot. And this is when you're testing it on in the office, when you're more or less on your own, all right, yeah. Or just your work colleagues around. How would you feel doing that in the middle of Tesco, all right? Or getting the train home from work, or when you're on the bus or something. You look like a plunker. So anyway, basically, it's just got bad reviews. I think it's a shame. And I think it's a real case of they went to market with it too soon without solving the problems.
Okay. Well, here's their main problem. It's the battery.
Yeah.
Battery. Apparently it runs hot, which is, you know, pretty alarming if you've got something, you know, attached to you. It attaches by magnets, which is actually quite cool. Yeah. The back of it is the battery, and the front is the thing. But apparently the batteries do not last long and they get warm. So red flag right
there.
That's
a no-no. Yeah. And the number one no-no for me is you are able to make phone calls with it, okay? But you cannot sync your contacts book.
See,
that's exactly.
It's an almost device, you know? It's almost good. But yeah, I mean, the question is, will this be replacing your smartphone? No, it will not.
To wrap up for today, three very quick things on sci-fi series and stuff like that. Apple have announced they're making a fifth series four of All Mankind. They're making a fifth series of For All Mankind. Got the wrong way around. Paramount are going to make a new Star Trek prequel. It's going to be a prequel to the J.J. Abrams movie with the young Captain Kirk. And Interstellar is coming back to the cinemas later in the year in September for its 10-year anniversary. And that is a movie well worth watching. Like Dune 2 we were talking about before we came on air. That is well worth watching on the big screen as well. Listen, that's it for news for this week. Not as always, thanks for your insight.
Delivering Irish tech news since 2006, this is Tech Radio.
When we hear the word blockchain, we might think of cryptocurrency or something on the tech space or something like that. But there are plenty of other ways blockchain can be used outside of that sphere. John Trask is CEO and founder of Demetra Incorporated, a company that uses blockchain to make the ag tech sector more efficient. He had a chat with Niall Kitson about his journey and how small farmers are reaping the benefits of digitization.
John, thanks for joining us on the show today. Looking at Demetra and what you're doing, that is the application of blockchain technologies in the agricultural sector, you're dealing with more than blockchain. You're dealing with apps, you're dealing with AI. Where did this particular solution come from? Was it a case of going out and seeing, okay, well, small farmers are having these problems, I've got just the solution for it? Or was it a case of people coming to you going, do you know what, we've got issues here. Is there something blockchain can do to help alleviate them?
You know, initially I was building blockchain systems for a lot of governments around the world in different areas. And I've got a farming background as a child and had a desire to build something in the space. As we got out and started studying what the challenges were for farmers and some pending regulatory compliance, different farms in different areas needed to comply to local regulations, which now has become the EUDR, we started transforming some of our satellite technology, the AI that we had built for that, in order to identify trees and the use of those trees for different reasons in agriculture. So our objective there was, how do we use the technology that we've built to help farmers comply with some of these deforestation regulations, which were becoming more prevalent on a local basis and now more prevalent on a global basis.
So in looking at that issue of deforestation, how granular can you get in these things?
Yeah, so we use a couple different technologies for it. And we can get granular down to the tree if we want to. We don't always need to do that. We can use about a 10 meter resolution on the satellite, which is a clumping of trees. And typically we're measuring farms that are a hectare to several hectares, but the farms can get quite large as well.
And I imagine, of course, as with anything that is unforeseeable, now we're dealing in a time of major weather events, there has to be a level of risk to be mitigated for there as well. Have you been able to come up with a system that can look at, you know, the probability of when a certain piece of land is going to be hit by a major weather event or potentially could be damaged by, you know, just to take an example, an oncoming tornado or a hurricane or something like that?
Yeah, so I don't know that we can necessarily predict that, although we do measure weather events within our application and how those affect farms. But there is a risk mitigation component. And if a farm has one of those unforeseen events, then you can work with the farm and plan how they can mitigate that risk so that they can still comply to the deforestation regulation and continue to operate their business. Certainly don't want somebody to have a tornado or hurricane and get put out of business and not be able to supply their coffee or cocoa or whatever their crop is.
So let's move along to that issue of business then, because, you know, on top of compliance when it comes to farmland, there is, of course, the integrity of the supply chain to worry about as well, because, you know, goods and services have to be packaged, they have to be regulated. Where do you find blockchain has come into your solution?
So that is one of the first areas. We use blockchain in a lot of areas, but traceability is really important. So we do the first mile traceability right from the farm. We actually trace if a farmer wants to go that far, right down to the seedlings and can track each individual seedling or tree. If not, just a geofence around the farm. And then the coffee, you need to maintain lot control throughout processing. So there's drying and blending processes and washing processes. And in those areas, you may combine various lots of coffee coming from different farms. So you need to know that both of the origin farms are compliant before you blend those. And then you have the trading where they'll package it up, put it in bags and ship it to Europe in order for the roasters to take it. So you need to maintain traceability there. Blockchain is a great tool. You can create an immutable record. You can tie all of those records together with a lot control and then produce a certificate in the end saying that a certain lot of coffee has been comprised of a certain number of processes and a certain number of farms, and still put all that together to work with the new EU regulations.
That's fascinating that you can sort of trace things down to the seedling. I suppose that's tremendously useful to farmers looking for, you know, is a particular plot of land especially profitable for me? Is this something I should hold on to? Is this another part of, you know, my farm I could potentially sell off to be something else for, you know, various reasons? Maybe the soil quality isn't as good. It's a great way of getting feedback as to how productive you are.
Yeah, it is. We've also built some tools that align with that, where we can now measure the suitability of the farm, give it a scorecard, and identify the features of the farm maybe you need to work on. So if the soil isn't the best soil for growing coffee, either you make a decision to move to another crop, or you can remediate your soil conditions by working on your organic carbon and fertilizing plans and things like that. So it's interesting as climate affects the world and business demands affect the world, how farmers make those decisions. And and having tools available for those farmers to help them make those decisions is paramount in today's world.
So who are you finding are using your service at the moment? I mean, it's very easy to assume that, you I'm not entirely sure what the term would be, big coffee or big cocoa or big agriculture would latch on to something that allows for an awful lot of control of product. However, are you seeing things at a more localized level where people are getting together and thinking, well, actually, we can do things for ourselves. We don't perhaps need that kind of heavy industry response or infrastructure that maybe we once did if we can do this digitally?
Yeah, I think we see a mix of that, and it's all for different reasons. You know, I'll give you an example. One of the cooperatives in Ethiopia was struggling this year, and they weren't getting contracts renewed by the EU. They identified that, and they were talking to some of their potential customers, and their customers didn't believe that they could be ready digitally in order to report on this for the 2025 products that they needed. And most of the large coffee companies renew contracts annually. So early 2024, they're booking new contracts. And so the EU was, I guess, negatively affecting this cooperative. And it's a very large cooperative in Ethiopia. And they were quite concerned they couldn't sustain their business if they lost these contracts. So they stepped up and found a solution, us, and are doing it themselves. Others were dealing with cooperatives who've always had an opinion and always tried to do the right thing and knew they needed to manage deforestation and knew they needed to grow sustainably. Farmers around the world are stewards of the land, and particularly smallholder farmers, a lot of them are on the side of a mountain in a jungle or a forest in Indonesia, and the land is very, very important to them, and growing a product that provides them a livelihood is as well, and they've always found a way to balance these things, and then they need a way to report that to their customers and be able to say, we are doing the right things, we are organic, and we know you want that, we are sustainable, and we're maintaining our forest. So, you know, kudos to them. I would say that way over half of the farmers we interact with always want to do the right thing, and maybe even a large number greater than that.
Mm-hmm. That idea of being stewards of the land is certainly very evocative and speaks to the sort of the dignity of, you know, independent farmers just trying to make a living in a sustainable fashion. There is the sort of the stereotype of the man in the wilderness trying to manage his flock, probably an unfair stereotype, but it does bring with it concerns over digital literacy and whether people have either the network infrastructure or even, you know, simple things like a smartphone to help engage with this new technology. So how have you found it? Is it an unfair stereotype or is there still an element of truth to it?
No, there's a large percentage of the small farmers in some of these nations that are just getting their first phone now. They're not comfortable using the phone, and it is a factor that we have to deal with from a training perspective. So, you know, we went into a cooperative in Indonesia with 3,500 farmers, and only 30% of them were capable of using the phone with the level of knowledge they had when we arrived. And so teaching them to use the devices, even providing shared devices at different areas in the community, became pretty important. And we have some strategies to deal with that. In Indonesia, for example, we partnered with Andalas University, and they were doing coffee research. We were fortunate in order to have them volunteer 30 students to go for 30 days into this area of coffee farms and train the farmers. And you know, one by one, show them how they register their information and how they use the application, and troubleshoot some of the challenges that they were having from a experience perspective. So it creates great opportunities where a community can come together and work through these things.
That element of user and customer experience must be immensely challenging when you've to create interfaces that are simple and intuitive while knowing that you can do so much in the back end.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun actually working on the projects and trying to figure this out. And particularly we're not dealing with English speakers. Our apps in 18 languages and the remote aspect of a lot of these customers provides challenges. They're, you know, we're not growing in the US or Europe. Many of these cooperatives are hundreds of kilometers into the mountains.
Wow. So you're covering vast estates, really, and hundreds of people. Working outside then those what we would regard as core markets of the EU and the US, have you found much in the way of culture clashes or anything like that? Or, you know, once the concept is shown, there is broad acceptance that, yeah, this will actually help us move into markets where, as you alluded to before, there might be regulatory concerns.
So I don't know that it's a clash of culture. I think there are some components of the extra cost and the extra effort. And are they going to earn more for their coffee? Or does the farmer just have to take this and do this and not be able to pass on those extra costs? And that depends on their relationship with the traders and the buyers and whether they can pass those costs on or not. In premium coffee, where you get a couple more dollars for the kilo, that's quite sustainable. In some of the lower quality grades from a coffee perspective, it's a debate. So we've got to work through that. The customers and the suppliers need to work together and figure out how those costs are borne. You know, one of the challenges is before you could pick coffee and ship all of it. Now you need to segment if you've got a cooperative of 3,500 farms, and let's say perhaps 10% of those farms have deforestation on their farm. Now you can't dry that coffee together. Now you can't wash that coffee together. Now you can't pass that on to the EU together. And so you need to build different management systems in order to do that. And that does create some challenges because it may require additional capital investment. It may require training with people who largely are volunteers in some of these cooperatives.
So looking then beyond sort of those core crops that you've been talking about, what other areas have you seen the technology applied in? Are we going sort of beyond crops into sort of other commodities, or are you just looking to keep within sort of the farmland, if you will?
So there's 570 million farmers in the world, and we've built systems for about 60 different crops so far, based on the projects that we're running. We also work in a wider area of the supply chain. We built AI to help farmers grow more crops, manage risks associated with climate and pests and diseases. And then we take all of that information, we package up into a mobile app and do all the work in the cloud, and then they can consume that information on their phone or a shared phone within their community. We're broadening our work to get into farm finance. We've built an FT-based program where a farming group that wants to raise funds can create an investment or a loan portfolio, and then that's managed with an NFT. So in Kenya, for example, we have a partner called 1 Million Avocados, We built a platform for them where they want to plant 1 million avocado trees, and investors around the world can buy a percentage of a tree or a percentage of a farm, have that registered on an NFT, do the monitoring by satellite to make sure that the system and the farmer are working and the investor has a good view of what's going on. And then when the crop is picked, yield measurement and sharing of revenue if we're on the investing side, or loan repayment when the crops are actually picked and the farmer generates some revenue.
And that was John Trask, CEO of Demetra, chatting with Niall Kitson. If you want to check out their website, it's demetra.io. And that link is always in the show notes for you.
This is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
That's it for our show this week. Do check out some of the other stories we have online. We didn't manage to squeeze into the podcast. What have we got there, Niall?
Yeah. First up, should you pay a ransom to stop your data getting sold online? Second, we have some bad news for Apple as Apple sales slip up in the first quarter. And lastly, Hyundai and Kia show off their new line of domestic robots.
You'll find all of those stories and more online at techcentral.ie. We're back again next Friday with a brand new show online and with RTE Radio 1 Extra. And do remember, please share our podcast with a friend. Just tell them to look up Tech Radio Ireland on Apple, Spotify, or now also on YouTube. Until next time, for myself, Dusty Rhodes, and from Niall Kitson, as always, have a great weekend. Take care.
Remember, you can get the latest Irish tech news with hourly updates, daily newsletters, and more at our website, techcentral.ie. Share the knowledge and invite a friend to listen. Search Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for Tech Radio Ireland, or listen with RTE Radio 1 Extra. Tech Radio is produced by dustpod.io for techcentral.ie. From me, Artemis, live long and prosper.